Good afternoon, everyone. Nate Dickinson with you here on KATE 1450. We're talking baseball, and as the players and owners in the MLB continue to argue about who should get what money and trying to get a baseball season started, I thought it'd be nice to have an expert on to talk a little bit about what all these discussions are about. So we have James Dworkin on the line. He's a professor at Purdue's Krannert School of Management, a PhD from the University of Minnesota in Industrial Relations, and also the author of Owners vs. Players, Baseball and Collective Bargaining. Now, Dr. Dworkin, we thank you for taking some time to talk to us here. Before we get into everything going on right now with baseball, how did you get involved and interested in this kind of stuff?
Well, Nate, first, thanks for having me on your show. I was an athlete as a kid. I played basketball, baseball, lots of different sports. And I went into my program at the University of Minnesota, most people who study labor relations pick a particular industry they like to study. Some take steel, some would take coal mining, some would take airlines. And I was just interested in professional sports, so I just basically decided I would focus a little bit on baseball. And, you know, over the years I've talked about football and basketball and hockey, but basically baseball is one of my main sports I played, and so I thought it would be interesting to study that as well.
All right, well, it seems like you're the expert on who to talk to about all this stuff. So I just want to kind of break down at least what I have as far as what we have getting up to this point in between baseball players and the owners, and then you can either correct anything that I may have missed or also just fill in on some holes that you think might be important in things that I didn't mention as well. So,
sure.
So this all starts in March with everything starting up with the coronavirus. The players and owners kind of come to the agreement then that we'll give you prorated salary of whatever it is that we end up playing, however many games that is. Then later on, a couple months later, whenever it was, owners come back and say, well, that's not really enough. We want a 50-50 split, basically a salary cap, which if you really follow baseball, you know the players weren't going to be up for. But I think owners were maybe thinking, and this is more my opinion, that public opinion might pressure them to get into it, you know, the whole story of I'm out of a job and you guys are refusing to make your millions of dollars to play a game. Players say no to that, which I think anyone, again, who knows the game knew would happen. And then from there, it's been kind of just this game of trying to make your proposal look the most like what the other side wants, while at the same time keeping as much money as you can to yourself. We've seen all sorts of different things where either side has really just kind of written down the math equation where it looks like what the other side wants, but at the same time trying to keep that final dollar sign at the end of the day mostly in your favor. Players, and last I've seen it, are a little more of $2 billion that they want. Owners are a little more than half of that in the latest relations. Is there anything that I'm missing in that timeline or anything that you feel like needs to be corrected?
No, actually, that was a very good summary. I would just add to it, one way that I view this, I don't see many people talking about this, is you know, the actual collective bargaining agreement between the Major League Baseball Players Association and the owners expires on December 1st, 2021. So that would be at the end of the 2021 season. So this kind of reminds me of, you know, the pitcher warming up in the bullpen, getting ready to go in the game. So these negotiations are just sort of a warm-up to what you're going to see after the 2021 season. I think neither side wants to look weak right now. And so I think that's what's causing some of the adversarial approaches going on right now. But you did a pretty good job of summarizing what's going on. And another thing you mentioned that is interesting, you know, people would always say that in Major League Baseball, when they have collective bargaining, it's always been a numbers game. But this year, I would add to that, it's also about the number of games. I mean, we've seen all kind of numbers passed around, 48, 52, 76, 79, 85. So basically, the three things they're going to have to decide on, if they're going to have baseball, and I predict they will. I'll tell you about that if you want. But they got to decide on all the safety issues, which I think can be resolved. And they've got to decide on the number of games, and then they've got to decide on the salary. This prorated thing you talked about, which was something that was in the March agreement. But then the owners say, well, in the March agreement, we thought that we were going to have fans. Now we don't have fans. We're going to have baseball is a $10 billion industry. And so they would take a $4 billion hit with no fans. And it's pretty likely that there won't be many fans. Same thing in college football. We're probably going to have college football, but it won't be very many fans in the stands. And so that takes away a lot of the revenue.
Now, I do want to ask you about the things you mentioned about how you think there will be baseball and other things, but I got a couple other questions first just about where we're at right now. How much closer do you think we are to an agreement from where we were when the owners basically came out and said that they wanted more money and proposed that 50-50 split?
Well, the way collective bargaining works, it always starts, one side starts with one kind of extreme, the other starts the other extreme, and you come together, and you keep coming together. So I think we're getting closer. I'm an arbitrator and a mediator, so I've been involved in this, and I know both sides are going to have to make concessions. Actually, they don't have to make concessions because the commissioner has the authority or the power through the agreement they had in March to just implement a 48-55 game season. But if he does that, then the players don't have to agree to the expanded playoff format. So they don't want that to happen. But I think the best, in my experience over the years, collective bargaining, whether you're talking about coal miners or nurses or whatever, it's always best for the two sides to come together and have a bilateral agreement rather than somebody imposing something unilaterally. So I think they're getting a little bit closer. I think each one of those, what you said earlier is a good point about, for a while there, the owners sort of made the same proposal but, you know, framed it differently. So when it came down to the money side, it was pretty much the same money, but it was framed a little differently, including that one frame that was kind of made it sound like revenue sharing and or there's going to be a salary cap. And like you said, the players are not going to go for that because professional baseball is the only one of the four big sports that doesn't have a salary cap or revenue sharing, and I don't think the players are going to be interested in that at all.
Now, you mentioned something that was exactly where I wanted to go next with what Commissioner Manfred said yesterday at the draft, that there would be a 100% chance baseball's being played, and kind of the biggest hammer that the owners have thrown down over the last couple of weeks, saying that, all right, if you want your prorated salaries, you can have them, but because of the deal we made in March, we can make the season however long we want then and keep however much money we can. You say that they have that power, and you mentioned also the situation with the players expanding the playoff format. What are the specifics of that deal that gives the owners that power to be able to say, all right, we'll give you the prorated salaries, but now we get to decide how long the season is, if that's the case?
Well, that was in the March agreement, basically. They not only agreed on the players would get prorated salaries, but they agreed on service time. You know, that's a big deal.
Uh-huh.
The number of days of service time for those players that are approaching free agency and salary arbitration. So basically, it's in there, and both sides agree that the commissioner has the ability to implement a season. It'd be a short season because you're getting to the point where we can't have too much longer a season and not conflict with a lot of the other sports. In fact, one interesting thing I think you're going to see is, well, if you're like me, everybody's kind of sports starved, and you haven't seen basketball, football, hockey, or baseball. Once the baseball players get back, and you know, the NBA's coming back July 31st, and hockey's coming back, the football starts September 10th, you're going to have all four sports on at the same time. You'll be overloaded with sports on TV, I think.
Is there anything else in that deal that was made in March that would have an effect on how the season's played?
Well, they talked about, they had a lot of stuff in there. There was some stuff about, they wanted to talk about safety, and then they came up with a 57-page, they called it an operating manual on safety with no spitting and no sharing equipment and no plates of food on the, and all kinds of stuff like that, and testing of players and where they're going to stay on the road and stuff like that. And, you know, that's why it seems like leagues like the NBA and hockey are going to some special cities because they don't want to have too much travel and things like that. That's why football has decided not to do any games and go international. So there's a lot of stuff in there, but basically the thing that's germane now is that they agreed on prorated salaries, but players said, period. The owner said that there was, and there really is nothing in there in that March agreement on whether there would be fans or not. So the owner said they had the right to continue discussions, and I don't have the exact language in front of me, but the commissioner has the right to implement a season. So when he said that he's 100% positive there'll be a season, he's right. I mean, that's, in my opinion, that's one of three ways this can go. One way is just totally not have a season, and both sides, I think, lose big time. And you know, the average baseball fan, I think, is age 57, and it's a lot older fan base than the other sports, and so they're worried about that. We're, you know, not having sports for a year and a half, not even baseball for a year and a half would be a problem. And just think about the players that didn't play for a year and a half. I don't know if you know this story, but Ted Williams, a great baseball player, and in 1942 he batted 348, and he went into World War II, and he didn't play baseball in 1943, didn't play baseball in 1944, didn't play baseball in 1945, and when he came back in 1946, he batted 340. So he already lost the, anything on his batting average. It's just amazing. But another example is take Kirk Flood, who sat out not for World War II, but for another battle. You know, he wanted to be a free agent. And after the year he sat out, he came back, and he basically played 13 games, and he basically said, I don't have it anymore. So if you're not playing for a long time, you risk losing, part of your skill, and also you risk fan base. So that's one possibility. The other possibility we've just been talking about is Manfred just coming up and setting a season of 40 to 55 games. And then the third possibility, which I really think is the one that's most likely to happen, and I'll predict on your radio show right now, the season will start on July 10th, a month from yesterday. That third scenario is a compromise, like you were talking about, and I think it'll probably be between 76 and 82 games, and I think also you'll have the expanded playoffs that the owners like, because in the expanded playoffs they get extra money, and the players like that too, because in a way they share the playoff money. And then the other thing will be that the players, where they're going to get in is on the prorated salary thing. I mean, there's no way we're going to get a deal on this if the players stick to 100%. So that's what collective bargaining is all about. So are they going to come down to 90%? Yeah, I don't know what they're going to come down to, 70%. There's going to be some difference. Like right now, in the particular player that makes $1 million, which is, the average salary in baseball is $4.1 million. You know, everybody talks about the 35 million players like Trout, but most baseball players are at the minimum or less than a million. But if you take a $1 million player under the player's recent offer for 76 games, prorated, that guy would make $469,000. If you take the owner's proposal where they get 50% of prorated, that person would make $234,000. And the other part of the owner's proposal was if they had a completed playoffs. The reason they haggle about that is because the owners are worried about coronavirus round two and maybe not having the playoffs. So I told the players, if we finish the playoffs and get the World Series champion, we'll increase your salaries to 75%. So that would put that person up to $351,000. So basically, what you're talking about for $1 million player, which is probably a pretty good example because it's an easy number to work with, the player's number is $469,000. The owner's best number is $351,000. So they're about $120,000 apart. And to me, that's what collective bargaining is all about. We can't figure that out. It's pretty sad state of affairs. They ought to be able to reach an agreement on that. And that's why I think this third scenario will be the one that will come out, the collectively bargained agreement. Because neither side, I think, wants to have a real adversarial position going into the 2021 negotiations, collective bargaining, when the actual entire collective bargaining agreement expires.
Now, that's something you brought up a couple of times, James. If, say, the collective bargaining agreement had just been re-signed, or not even just been re-signed, but had, like, 5 years left on it, I guess that may be close to just a re-signed anyway, but if it was further away that they would have to have these negotiations about things anyway, do you think these sides would be more stubborn on things? Is that going to help things along?
I think if the negotiation was farther away, it would make it easier for things to get resolved. In fact, if you look at all the other sports, like professional football, their collective bargaining agreement expires in, hold your breath, 2030. And so in the NFL, they're going to play a whole season. They've done away with international travel. The Miami Dolphins say they're going to have only 15,000 fans in their stadium. So, and the same thing with basketball and hockey, because they don't have collective bargaining. Hockey's coming up after the 2022 season, but they both in a little different situation on money too, because in both basketball and hockey, they played about three quarters of the season. So the players had made most of their money already, so it was pretty easy to come up to an agreement. And some people say that in basketball, commissioners kind of pitching a perfect game, because basketball seems to be doing everything right and getting a lot of good publicity. And same with hockey, going to be good. Football, they're going to play a full season. Players will get full pay. So baseball is the only one where the players are going to get a lot less than their full pay. In basketball, I'd say the players are going to get around 90% of their total pay. In hockey, probably about the same thing. Football, 100%. And in baseball, we just talked about anywhere between 50%. And what the owners have been proposing recently, you know this because you keep up on the stakes, it's been about 33%. So for every dollar you should have made, if you play the whole season, you get 33 cents.
Now, the owners have thrown out this number that if we keep playing more and more games, for every game played, they said they'd lose north of $600,000. I think it was like $640,000 for every extra game played this season with just everything we've talked about, no fans and all that kind of stuff and all the revenue lost. The players haven't been buying that, really. They've been questioning that, wanting the owners to open up their books. Do you believe that that number is a reasonable number for them to throw out there? Do you believe that that's actually true? And do you think that the players can actually get the owners to show them all the math?
The answer to the last question is absolutely not. They'll talk around a little bit, show them something, but they're not going to open up all the books because they don't have to. The thing about the $640,000 per game, I think that's actually pretty reasonable. And actually, I think you and I, if we had a back-of-the-envelope calculation like we talked about, we could pretty much do that in a couple of minutes. You know, just look at a particular game, how many hot dogs are sold, and, you know, you look at what they call the fan cost index, what it costs to take a family four-day game, four tickets, four hats, you know, four hot dogs. I think that's pretty reasonable. Somewhere in that neighborhood. They're definitely, with no fans, you definitely lose quite a bit of that kind of revenue. Now, that's why, you know, on the other hand, there's some other revenue that they could continue to get, maybe get more of. That would be the television revenue, especially if they had expanded playoffs. I sort of like the idea of expanded playoffs, Nate. I don't know what you think, but I just think some of these teams that haven't been in the playoffs for a while, if they had a chance to get in, might bring a little spark of interest to some cities like Cincinnati, where they haven't had a team in the playoffs for a while. So just that's something that I think is probably not a bad idea.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I agree with what you said about kind of the, well, business side of it, too. If baseball fans are definitely upset about not having their teams on right now. If they can get them in the playoffs later on, it might be able to help out with keeping fans interested and helping out what people are saying is, in some cases, people are saying is a dying game with just all the older fans and young people not merely paying attention.
Yeah, and the good thing is, you know, in baseball, all the teams to be involved. Hockey took a little bit of a hit because they're dropping about seven or eight teams, or their seasons are just going to be finished. And in baseball, though, all the teams will be involved. And, you know, I think they did some analysis. You probably read it because you seem to be pretty up on this, but about the Washington team that won the World Series, if they would have had only a 50-game season, weren't they having a terrible record last year after the first 50 games? They wouldn't have even been in the playoffs.
Yeah, they were 19-31. That's exactly 50 games in. That's the record that everyone points to. You know, 19-31, then they went on their huge run. So, you're right.
Yeah, I forgot that the 19-31. I'm glad you brought that up. That's a stark statement of how this could work. You know, you could get a team that's not so good, get a hot streak, and they could make the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Really interesting.
All right, James. Now, I want to let you give us kind of your scenario of, since you've said you're an arbitrator and a mediator, if you had the ears of both sides, and again, you said you've been involved with this, so maybe you do have the ears of both sides.
I don't. I'm not involved with Major League Baseball in any way in negotiation. I've studied it over the years. Uh-huh. I have arbitrated in many other industries and mediated too.
Oh, okay. But if you had the ears of both sides, what would you suggest be the final solution? Say Rob Manfred says, hey, I'm tired of this. You guys got to come together. We're bringing in the players' union and the owners in to talk to James Dworkin and figure this out. What would your final solution be as to who gets what prorated salaries? Break down the numbers as to you think, if you could make an agreement right now, would be the most likely way for both sides to end up walking away and say, all right, we'll take it.
Well, Well, on safety, I would pretty much go by I think the operating manual they had is pretty good, but I would probably make sure on things like testing, and I'd want to make sure that we could have enforcement of the rules so that players don't break the rules. But I think safety is going to be able to be handled. And in terms of number of games, I would not take the short season. I wouldn't take the players. You know, negotiate collective bargaining is a compromise. So I would probably take something in the order of about 75, 76 games. And in terms of the salary, I certainly don't think I would tell both sides if I was mediating, you have to make concessions. So I can't. I mean, if the players are just going to stick with prorated, we'll never get a deal. If the owners are just going to stick at whatever they have, we won't get a deal. Both sides have to compromise. So I think reasonably compromise might be in the 75% range or something like that. So that would be my thought. I mean, players are basically they're taking a big hit already because the new cap season won't be played, and then on top of that, you know, they like to get paid some. I mean, you think. A lot of people say this is chase of billionaires against millionaires, but many players are not really that rich. I mean, they especially early in their careers, maybe they might if they make $500,000, that's where it'd be. And then can we talk about the umpires too? Or not interested in that?
No, sure, go ahead.
So the umpires, interestingly, there, they just had signed a collective bargaining agreement on May the 1st, and they've already agreed with Major League Baseball for a 30% pay cut. Umpires, I don't know if you know this, but umpires in Major League Baseball earn between $110,000 and $432,000. They also had an agreement. They thought for a while that all the games would be played in Arizona and Florida, and they agreed that if they played in Arizona and Florida that they would not have instant replay because those facilities didn't have the proper equipment for instant replay. There are 76 Major League umpires, so basically with them, they can earn about 70% of their original salary. So that's why I kind of was zoning in on that 70 or 75% figure of prorated that I was talking about earlier. The umpires agreement, they got their retirement benefit coverage basically, umpires like postseason because they all get $38,500 for postseason, and the ones that actually worked in the postseason get more money. And there's something in the umpires' collective bargaining agreement about how they select which umpires get to work the World Series. So baseball, I have to say, Major League Baseball has been pretty good on getting the deal right with the umpires. Just you'd hate to think that we agree with players and you got to. Oh, we're getting all umpires. The ones that are really getting shafted on all this are, because there won't be any fans, are all the people that work at the stadium. You probably, since you're from Indiana, where I was hanging around, you've probably been to Wrigley Field. And do you remember the place maybe where all the people that want to work selling beer and stuff at the Cubs games would hang out to see if they can get selected for the day? Do you remember that? Did you ever see that?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
And so they... You know, that I wouldn't say a lot of money, but probably if you work 81 home games, I heard that they can make $10,000-$12,000. It's not enough to sustain a person, but you know, it's a big chunk of money that they would count on, and all that's gone this year. You have no fans, you have everybody, and so that this is like I think is kind of a sad thing for those workers.
Yeah, and that's been one of the sad things across sports, too, just not having it and having those people. We've seen NBA teams have their owners just reach out and try and pay as much as they can for that because, as you mentioned, the people who are doing those jobs, a lot of them are depending on that money just to be able to get by.
Yeah, you know, you probably know this, but the minor Major League Baseball, they're putting in some money for minor league players because I think, from what I've read, there's basically be no minor league season. Where I live here near Indianapolis, there's a nice AAA team of the Pittsburgh Pirates called the Indianapolis Indians. You may have actually been to the stadium. We go to several games a year, and there's nothing this year. So the minor league players, are they going to get paid anything? I think very little. They don't get much anyway. So I think Major League Baseball has put in some funds so minor league players get something. But that's another problem. a year of no skill development, I think that's a big problem. So I think they got to have a ceiling.
All right, James, before we let you go, you mentioned July 10th, a month from yesterday, as a date that you think baseball could get back by. I don't think that the layman or even critical baseball fan would suggest that things could happen that quickly. What makes you confident that things will get done by then?
I think they're going to settle in the next few days, and I think, time for spring training, and the players probably, the non-pitchers probably need about 2.5 to 3 weeks to get in shape. And I think a lot of them are probably working out anyway. The pitchers need a little longer, but the deal includes expanded rosters and how football has a taxi squad. It's almost like they have like a taxi squad. So I think instead of a roster of 25, imagine a roster of 30 for every game, and then 20 other players like on a taxi squad that can be used. And doubleheaders, they might have had a larger roster. So you have a lot more pitchers. Maybe pitchers won't go as long. You may have some of this situation where you have starters that are relief pitchers that go one or two innings. But so I think everything should be ready. And the thing is, even to play a shorter season like 55 games, you got to get started pretty soon because the owners have been saying they want to end the regular season by September 27th, and the players want to go until like October 11th. And so we're going to have to get started pretty soon. And in my opinion, there's no way they're going to wait till August. So I just said yesterday was the 10th, and I just was talking to some people about it, and I just made a prediction on another interview I was on that it would be a month from the day. And I think that's going to be pretty close, would be my guess. I don't think there's any way they can get going by July 4th, but I think July 10th is reasonable. I sure hope I'm right.
Yeah, I think everyone hopes you're right, too. That would be good for everyone who's skeptical, and there's a lot of people skeptical of what baseball's been doing over the last couple of months, but James Dworkin's the expert on this stuff. He wrote the book on it, Owners versus Players, Baseball and Collective Bargaining. Thanks for taking some time to talk to us, James, and again, hopefully we'll get baseball back as soon as you're hoping for.
Yeah, I'd be happy to chat with you again sometime about this, okay?
All right, sounds good, James. Thanks for calling in. We'll talk to you again soon.
All